Okay, good evening. Good evening, and welcome to part two of our discussion of the structure and the ideas behind Birchas HaMazon. And tonight, we would like to continue a little bit our introductory discussion. Last week, we spoke about the obligation of Birchas HaMazon, how it is an obligation min haTorah, how it comes from the Torah itself, making it probably unique among brachos, distinct from all the other obligations of making a bracha, which generally come from rabbinic law. And as we explained, Birchas HaMazon is from Torah law, from the Achalta v'Savata v'Rachta, and therefore has a more stringent obligation behind it. So, for example, if one is unsure whether or not he's obligated to bench, so then he is obligated to bench again because of the rule of Safek min haTorah v'Hachmir, that we take a more stringent attitude when it comes to Torah law. And that's distinct from all other brachos where we take a lenient attitude if we're not sure, because they come from rabbinic law. So to continue the introduction, we started to get a little bit to the material that comes before benching itself, and that would focus first on the concept of zimun. So we know that if we have three who are gathered together for a meal involving bread, so then there is an additional introduction that's known as zimun. And if there's a minion present, so then it also includes the name Elokeinu to represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the idea of a zimun, that's the topic of a debate in the Talmud and in the later commentaries. That may also be a obligation in HaTorah, perhaps a separate obligation in HaTorah that is derived from the pasuk in Parshas Hazinu. And there we find the pasuk that we say every day before Mincha, Kishem Hashem Ekra Habugodol Elokeinu, that when I am about to call out to God, so first I ask of you who are assembled here to express His greatness, and that's essentially what's going on when we introduce benching with a zimun. So if we assume that the zimun has at least three, so you have one individual speaking who's saying Kishem Hashem Ekra, I will now call out to God. And therefore I ask of you, plural, that's at least two more, Habu Gozal Elokeinu, please express God's greatness. So that could be a source min haTorah. Whether or not that's how we conclude, that is a debate among the poskim. And as Mr. Brewer points out, most opinions seem to maintain that this is an obligation midrabanan, that we don't actually assume that this comes from the Torah itself. Although the Kiryas Sefer of the Ma'bit, he assumed that if it was a minion, if we're saying Elokeinu, that's a higher level, and that perhaps is included in that pasuk Ki Hashem Hashem Ekra, that would be an obligation min haTorah. But the idea of a zimun only with three, so that's an obligation only midrabanan. So here, how would it affect things if we say it's min haTorah midrabanan? So this is similar to what we spoke about at Birchas HaMazon itself. It's just we saw that when it comes to Birchas HaMazon, if we're not sure, if we're obligated, we have to assume that we are. We have to treat it stringently. So the same would seem to be true as far as Zimun is concerned, that if we're not sure if we're obligated in a Zimun, so if we're not sure if we're obligated in Zimun, so then we should assume that it is a... then we should assume that we are able to be lenient if it's a rabbinic obligation. So this idea is interesting because last week we mentioned that not all of benching is min haTorah. That when it comes to the fourth bracha of benching, that's an obligation midrabanan. The rabbis added on that fourth bracha. But nonetheless, if we're going to bench misafek, if we have a doubt and we're going to bench, so as the Magen Avraham points out in his commentary, that we say the entire benching, even the fourth bracha, because we don't want one to treat the fourth bracha with disrespect and say, that's only an obligation midrabanan, and therefore, I don't have to be so machmir. But here, the Zimun is separate. The Zimun is an introduction to benching. So if one would leave out the Zimun, that's not going to lead to a disrespect to the Zimun. But if one were to leave out the fourth bracha of benching, that would create an atmosphere of disrespect for the fourth bracha, and therefore, when we're saying Birchas Hamazon to be safe, we'll include the fourth bracha as well. We only recite the Zimun on the meal that's going to contain bread, because, as the Ritva points out, the whole idea of Zimun is that there is a kviyut, that there is some formality to the meal. And the formality has been pointed out that there's some of the calls are not on mute. So if everyone could please put themselves on mute so we could have a little bit of a quieter environment. Sorry. Okay, so if everyone could please hit mute. I don't have the ability to control that from where I am. Okay.
I'm trying to make it louder.
Okay. Okay, so the Ritva points out that this idea of Hazimun is associated specifically with bread, because bread is when you have a formal meal, and the whole notion of Zimun is formality. So what exactly is Zimun? What exactly is involved when we talk about Zimun? So the way we practice Zimun nowadays, so we know that we have a leader, and all of us are benching, and at each one of the four bracha points, so we pause and we wait for the leader to recite the bracha, the ending line of each of those four sections. But if you look in the earlier sources, if you look in the Rush and you look in the Rambam, that's not the way it's described. The way it's described is that we should have one leader, and that leader is saying the entire benching out loud. And the participants in the Zimun are not themselves benching. They sit quietly and they listen to the Mavarach. So that's not the way we normally see things practiced nowadays. And it's actually not the way that it's brought even in the Shulchan Aruch. And it's explained, the commentaries, the Kaz points out, the Beit Yosef himself explains in his commentary to the Torah. I'm sorry to still point out about this muting issue. So I'm not technically the host, so I don't think I can mute everyone. So I don't know how to address that. Sorry about that. Okay, now is everyone muted? I don't think so. Okay. Anyway, so this idea of how to perform the Zimun, that we have one person saying it out loud and everyone is listening. So how come nowadays we don't do that anymore? So the Beis Yosef explains a little bit in his commentary to the Torah, and the Taz also stresses this in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, that the idea is that really, ideally, that's how it would be done. That there would be one leader reciting all of Birchas Hamazon out loud, and everyone else would listen to him. The problem is, that requires more concentration than we have nowadays. Now, to be able to sit quietly and listen to the entire text of the Birchas Hamazon, word for word, from somebody else with perfect concentration, so we're not able to do that anymore. So as a second best option, so we'll all recite our own benching, but we'll have this formality and we'll have this sense of unity by pausing at the bracha break, and we'll listen to the recitation of the bracha from the mezameh. But ideally, it would have had one person benching out loud. And as a number of achronim explained, as Soloveitchik explained this way, and a few others made this point, that this is not what we normally find. Let's say if one person recites Kiddush on behalf of the entire table, and everyone hears Kiddush from that one person, or you hear Kriyas HaMegillah from one person. So that's the concept of Shomei Ka'ona, that we have an idea in general that you can listen to a bracha, you can listen to some kind of a recitation from one person and fulfill the mitzvah that way. But here is something else. Here, a Zimun is not about Shomei Ka'ona, but it's about the joining of these people into a chabura, into a group. And there should be one Birchas Hamazon coming from that chabura, coming from that unit. And it's perhaps comparable to Chazar Sashach, also as the Soloveitchik understood, that when we have Shmoneh Esrei in Shul, So we have everyone recites their own Shemone Esrei, their own private Shemone Esrei, the silent version, and then the Chazan says it out loud. So the Salvechik understood there also that the first Shemone Esrei, that's Tefillah B'Tzivor, we're all davening together with the congregation, and the second Shemone Esrei, the Chazan says out loud, that is the Tefillah of the Tzibor, the Tefillah HaTzibor, it's being recited as a unit. So too, that's the idea of Zimun, that we should have the entire Chabura bench as one. And ideally, it would just have this one individual reciting the benching, and everyone else would listen. But because we don't have this power of concentration anymore, so we have this second best way of doing it, that we all bench on our own, but we pause for the brachos, and we fulfill the obligation this way. The Gemara says that if you have a group of three, and you have two who want to leave already and they want a bench, and one of them is still eating, so that individual who's still eating, he has to pause and listen to the zimun from the other two. And the way we generally do it is that they say the formula at the beginning of the zimun, and the individual who's waiting, so he answers, and he also waits for the first bracha to be recited, the bracha of Hazan. He listens to that bracha, and after they finish that, and they start noda, so then he can continue with his meal. So the rule in the Gemara is that one should stop his meal to answer for the two, and not the other way around. If one person wants to leave, and there are still two who are still eating, so that individual doesn't get to make the other two stop. But the other way around, if two of them want to stop, they can bench, and they can ask the other individual to answer them. So it sounds like that's Stam Derech Eretz. Okay, so we should have the minority follow the majority. That's the way the Ebene Ezel, or this is Zalman Meltzer, explains it. But as Rav Soloveitchik noted, it could be that it's more than Derech Eretz. It could be that if the idea of the Zimun is that it is the bracha of the Chabura, the bracha of the unit, so then it's appropriate that the majority should establish when they are benching, and that's the way they do it. So that essentially is the structure and the idea of the Zimun. So I want to make some observations about some of the language of the Zimun. But before doing that, let's just take note of Shir HaMalos. And Shir HaMalos, which we generally recite on Shabbos and Yontif and days that are like that, days when we don't recite Tachanun. So it's particularly relevant to talk about that now, during the 3 weeks, because that is the explanation, really, of where Shir HaMalos comes from. So why do we recite Shir HaMalos before benching? It's in the very beginning of the Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Aleph of the Shulchan Aruch, it says that a Yirei Shamayim, somebody who is reverent of God, it's appropriate that he should constantly be thinking about the Churban. He should always be worrying about the fact that we're in Galus and that we're looking to be restored very quickly. So based on that, so the Zohar has an idea also that one who has this mentality during a meal at the Suda, well, the more so he is credited with a connection that is as if he built the Beis HaMikdash. So it's a very powerful idea to be connected to the Churban at the time of the meal. And the Shla, commenting on this, says, therefore it's appropriate that when it comes time to benching, before you actually start the benching, it's appropriate to make some reference to the Churban and therefore take a selection from Tehillim that will bring up that reference. And that selection, which has kind of fallen by the wayside nowadays, maybe during the 3 weeks people pay more attention to it, but all year round you don't find this recited so often, but the original idea was to say Al Naros Bavel. Other sources had other suggestions, but that was the common idea that you should say Al Naros Bavel before benching, in order to fulfill this notion of connecting to the Churban at the time of the meal. And it got shifted that on Shabbos and Yontif, when it's not appropriate to make ourselves sad and focus on the destruction, so we take a more cheerful approach and we take a more positive reference and we say Shir HaMalos instead so that we can focus on the binyan, so we can focus on the construction. But it's the same idea that we're supposed to have this awareness of the Churban And on Shabbos and Yontif, we want to make it more positive, so we use the reference of Shir HaMalos. And as the Yesod V'Sharish HaAvoda emphasizes, that the idea is not so much whatever selection it is that we're going to take, it's the hergesh, it's the emotion that is going to be brought about. So therefore, whatever it is that's going to create that connection, it's going to create that awareness of the korban, that's going to do the trick. So Shir HaMalos is effective as well. And somewhat ironically, perhaps happened that Al-Naros Bavel seems to have fallen away. Maybe it's only on Shabbos and Yontif when people have a little bit more time and they're able to bring in these extra additions. So Shir HaMalos has survived as a practice, and Al-Naros Bavel doesn't get so much attention, except perhaps now, this time of year, 3 weeks to 9 days, there's a little bit more awareness that that would be appropriate. And whenever I'm at an occasion, if there's some kind of an event, it's not actually Shabbos and Yontif, but it's a Sudas Mitzvah of some kind, let's say it's a Siyum, or something along those lines, sometimes people ask me, should we say Shir HaMalos? So I always say yes. Whatever, and if the people are ready at all to say Shir HaMalos, they always say, you should say it, because if this is the history, that really we should always be saying Al Na'arus Bavel. And we say Shir HaMalos to replace Al Na'arus Bavel. So if we don't have Al Na'arus Bavel, better at least to say Shir HaMalos. So if people are ready to say something and they're asking, should we say Shir HaMalos, they always say yes, because at least we should get something that's going to connect to the Chorban. Even in the positive sense of connecting to the Binyan, it's not so important that it necessarily be justified by an occasion that's on the level of Shabbos Yontif. Whatever is going to get us to connect to that message is going to be worthwhile. So since the custom has developed to recite Shir HaMalos, at least on Shabbos and Yontif, so that could have halachic ramifications, because the Gemara says that if one is about to bench, and one says to his friends, okay, guys, let's bench, so then at that point, even if he changes his mind, and he decides that he's not going to bench, but he wants to continue eating first, he wants to have a little bit more, too late, he's going to have to wash again and start a new bracha. Because mentally, he separated himself from the suzo. He took himself out of the mindset of the meal, and that was made clear by the fact that he told everyone else we're ready to bench. So even though he hasn't actually benched, nonetheless, the meal is considered over, and if he's going to have any more food, it's going to require a new bracha. So the poskim brought up the question, so what if he doesn't actually say, let's bench, but he starts saying Shir HaMalos, he recites Shir HaMalos. So is it permissible to break in between Shir HaMalos and benching and to have a little bit more food at that point? Not because there's a prohibition of a hefsek. It's not that it's actually connected to Berachos HaMazon in a halachic way that we wouldn't be able to interrupt. It's coming from a different angle. It's coming from the concern that maybe the mindset that is reflected by saying Shir HaMalos is that you finish the meal, and therefore it's going to require another type of bracha in order to justify eating more. So, what's the halacha? As you would expect, it's machlokas. So, among the three poskim who talk about this issue, one says, yes, it's considered to be a siluk suda, you'll have to make a new bracha. Another says, no, it's not a siluk suda. It doesn't constitute a finishing of the meal, it's separate, it's just a recitation that we do before Berachos HaMazon, but it doesn't necessarily constitute the actual completion of the meal. And a third authority considered this question said, good question, it's a safek, he's not sure which it is. That's what you'd expect, just like so many things in the machlokas, and there basically are three opinions, yes, no, and maybe. So what about the actual words that are used in the Zimun itself? So at the very beginning of the Zimun, it's customary to say Bereshus, to ask permission from at least some of those who are assembled. And if just a crowd of people, so you say Bereshus, the crowd, Bereshus Rabosai. If one's Rebbe is present, so then say Bereshus Mari Verabi, if he's Rebbe of all the people assembled, so then that would be enough. We just have to acknowledge him on behalf of the whole crowd. And if one's father is present, so then he generally says, Bereshus Avi Mori. Why not say, Bereshus Imi Morati, if one's mother is present? So should one also ask for permission from his mother as well. So we don't see that so often, but it's not necessarily out of the question. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein discusses this in one of his essays, where the assumption seems to be that the reason we more commonly see people asking for a shush from their fathers and not from the mothers is because the assumption might be that the Bershus is saying you might be the one to bench, and I'm asking for your permission to bench. I'm asking that it should be okay with you that I should bench instead of you. So since in a zimun that's involving men, it's generally only the men who are mezameh, so it would seem to make sense to ask for shush from the father. There is a concept of zimun by women as well, and it's a machlokus whether maybe three women who are reading together either have an obligation to make a zimun or at least a rishos, but assuming that you have a room of men and women, so then it's the men who are leading the zimun, so the idea that you would ask rishos only from the father might reflect that idea that that's what it's supposed to represent. That you could be benching, is it okay with you if I bench? But Rav Zilberstein writes that he's not so sure that's what it's about. That the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah says that when it comes to kavod, one shows to his Rebbe, so he shows that kavod not just by saying, I'm going to do this instead of you, is that all right? He shows that kavod by whatever he's doing. He's saying, is it okay with you? Is it okay with you if I sit down? Is it okay with you if I get up? Is it okay with you if I take a walk? So that asking for a shush is a way of showing respect. And the Piskei Tshuva writes, in the Hilchos, the halachos of Kibbut Ave'im, the Piskei Tshuva writes that whatever halachos apply to one's Rebbe applies to one's parents as well, to one's father and to one's mother, because of the obligation of Kibbut Ave'im. So if it's a gesture of respect to one's parents, then it would make sense that one should ask for the rishus of his father and also of his mother. So he's not conclusive on this point, but he says it's very possible that that would make sense. So there are different practices in how to relate to that rishus, to this idea of asking for permission, and there is this logic that could apply to both parents, and perhaps that's an approach as well. In general, the idea that goes back to the Gemara is that the one who's benching is the guest. Now, when you have a guest at the meal, so the Gemara has a few opinions about this, but the dominant opinion is that the hamotzi, the breaking of the bread, that should be recited by the balabas, by the host, because he's the one who's going to then give out the bread, and we want him to be generous. And we're concerned that if you give that honor of breaking bread to somebody who's not the host, he's going to be inhibited. He's not going to want to give out the bread as generously as possible. It's not his bread. He's going to feel a little bit held back. So if it's the host who's doing the breaking of the bread, so then he'll be able to be generous, and he'll give out good portions. But when it comes to the benching, so we want the benching to be recited by the guest because there is a special bracha in benching, God willing, we'll talk about it in future weeks, that is designated for the oreach, a bracha ha'oreach, a bracha that a guest should recite in honor of his host. So we want him to be able to say that, so therefore we select the guest as the one to bench. And as we can now understand, that that's a holdover from the original practice of Zimun that we spoke about before. We said that the original model of Zimun would have had only one person benching on behalf of everyone. So if the guest wasn't the one leading the benching, he wouldn't have the opportunity to say this bracha at all. So in order to provide him with that chance, so we asked the guest to lead the Zimun. But nowadays, it's really not so important, because nowadays everyone who's present is benching. So all the guests, maybe there's many guests, all the guests will be able to say the Berachas HaReach anyway, so it's not so crucial that he has to be the one to lead the Zimun. But nonetheless, that's a holdover from those days that we give a priority to the guest to be the one to lead the Berachas HaMazon. So if that's the case, okay, so he's not necessarily the most honored person at the table, he's not necessarily a parent, not necessarily the Rebbe. So therefore, this notion of Bershut, it could mean that is it okay with you if I lead the benching instead of you? Or maybe like Rav Zilberstein is suggesting, maybe it's not about that at all, but maybe it's a way of just showing honor to a distinguished person, to a Rebbe or to a parent, and saying, I'm going to do something now. I hope that's okay with you. So that's as far as that opening line of Bershut. Then we say Nivarech, and if there's a minion present, we say Nivarech Elokeinu. It's interesting, the Radbaz points out in a tshuva that if there's no minyan present, so we say nevarech she'achalnu mishalo, it's a little impersonal. We don't mention HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all then, at that point. When a person gets an aliyah, so he says, Baruch Hu et Hashem HaMavarech. He tells the crowd that they should bless God, and it says, it mentions God's name. So here, there's no minyan if it's a zimun of three, so you say, Nevarech she'achalnu mishalo, how come we don't mention God's name? So the Rabbaz explains that the idea of mentioning God's name is specific to the minyan. So Birchas HaTorah that's being recited at Aliyah, when there's a Kriyas HaTorah going on, so by its very nature, that's only happening when there's a minyan. So therefore, you're going to have Hashem's name included in this invitation. But when you have a Zimun, so if it's a Zimun with a minyan, so then you have the Elokeinu. But if it's a Zimun of three, so then we don't have any need to say that. And the individual is not only speaking on his own behalf, and he's not telling everyone else, okay, I'm about to bless God and you should respond. But as we understood from before, that it's the concept of a bracha of the chabur, they're all speaking together, so they're all saying as one, okay, nevarech she'achalnu mishalo, we know who we're talking about. And when there is dominion, and there is a reference to Elokeinu, so then there are many who have the practice to get up a little bit, to stand as much as is reasonable for one word, and to show honor to that word Elokeinu by rising. So what's the idea there? So the logic seems to be that we know that a davar should be kedusha, when you have something that has a special status of holiness, it requires a minyan, so we stand for that generally. So if that's the case, if Elokeinu requires a minyan, so then it would seem to label that as a davar shebekdusha, and therefore it would make sense to stand. However, many pointed out that that's not necessarily the case, and the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva, Siman and Aleph, where he explains that one should not stand up for the word Elokeinu, and as Rav Soloveitchik explains, and Rav Shechter quotes from this in one of his forum, that here, the reference to Elokeinu that requires 10, that's not because it's a davar shebekdusha. It's true that when something has this higher status of a davar shebekdusha, so then that requires a minyan, and that's something you should stand for. But not everything that requires a minyan is a davar shebekdusha. So when it comes to the Elokeinu here, the Gemara says that we only recite that when there's a minyan, because lav arach arach, it's not derech eretz, it's not appropriate to bring up the Elokeinu when we don't have a tzibur, we don't have a minyan present. But it doesn't mean that it's a davar shebekdusha. It means that it's just more derech eretz, it's more appropriate to only say this in the presence of a minyan. So therefore, it's not a davar shebekdusha, as the Soloveitchik and Chassam Sofer understood. And so the idea of understanding that we have the other dvarim shebekdusha, that would not apply to Elokeinu. And as Tshuva Chassam Sofer describes, he sat in his place and he didn't move at all during that recitation. It wasn't something that had to be stood up for. So this brings us now to the precipice of Birchas HaMazon itself. And God willing, next week we will start with the actual text of Birchas HaMazon. We have to understand each bracha by itself and then go through the language of the bracha. So God willing, next week that's what we'll start with Birchas HaZan and the actual words. And just to quickly recap, so tonight we spoke about the idea of a Zimun, which may be Min HaTorah, is probably more likely Midrabanan, but it's a way of introducing benching and also of creating a bracha of the chabura, that's the ideal model, and once upon a time that meant that only one leader would bench out loud and everyone else would listen, they wouldn't bench at all, but the way we do it nowadays is we have everyone bench on their own and they pause for the leader because, as the commentaries explain, we can't concentrate so well to listen to every word. And then we talked about Shir HaMalos, especially appropriate for the 3 weeks, a reflection of the idea that we should always be concerned about the churban, especially at the time of the meal. And therefore, as the Shlach explains, one should say Al Naros Bavel before benching. But on Shabbos and Yontif, when we don't want to be upset, so we focus on the binyan instead of the churban. And the practice has fallen away to some extent, and we seem to only say Shir HaMalos and Al Naros Bavel. So to take every opportunity to say one or the other, especially during the 3 weeks, is especially appropriate because that's the idea to connect to the churban at the time of the meal. And we went through a little bit some of the language of the Zimun, and we talked about the Rishus. What exactly is that Rishus about? Is it on benching when you could be benching, or is it simply an act of respect, like one would show to a Rebbe or to either parent? I should also note that the Kafachayim record the practice, which you don't see so much anymore, that on Shabbos they would say Bershus Shabbos Malkisa, and on Sukkot they would say Bershus Hashpizin, so we don't find that so much anymore. And then we talked about Elokeinu, which could be viewed as a Davar Shebekdusha, that's why some people stand, but as the Chasam Sofer from Slavetsch explained, that's not the idea, it's a reflection of this notion in the Gemara, that it's not Derech Eretz to say Elokeinu without a minion, but not that it's a Davar Shebekdusha. Okay, so we'll stop there. I look forward, God willing, next week to continuing with the text of the benching itself. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.